the AM and FM 107 Radio Network, broadcasting from AM and FM stations around the country. Welcome to the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here is your host, the guy that believes anyone can be a successful entrepreneur because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio. I hope you're having a great day out there, making some money, growing your business, starting your business, just doing something to take control of your own future. We have a fantastic show today. One of my favorite guests of all time is with us for a new interview. Lon Safko has been on the show several times. He is the inventor of Siri and has, it's amazing some of the things I could throw out. He's got 30,000 of his things were given to the Smithsonian. There's exhibits on him on the Smithsonian. It's just unbelievable, the career. I'll introduce him formally here in just a minute, but it's unbelievable. Can't wait to have Lon back. After that, the man with the coolest name ever, Butch Phelps, is with us to talk about stretching a whole new way. We've learned to stretch wrong, and because of that, we're getting all of this inflammation, pain, and stuff as we get older. And Butch is going to teach us a new way to stretch and to have pain relief. So I'm very, very excited. I have body pain, so I can't wait to talk to Butch. But first, here's Lon. I'm excited to welcome back to the show the smartest man ever, the number one figure in computer history. I don't know how to introduce him. He is all of those things. Please welcome Lon Safko to the show. He invented little things like Siri and things like that, has won every award out there. He has 18 permanent collections in the Smithsonian. Yes, he is in the Smithsonian in 18 different collections. He has 14 inventions that are in the Computer History Museum in Mountain View. He was part of the PBS television special on social media, the first one about social media. Obviously, he's huge in voice recognition and voice synthesizing, as I already pointed out, and won a lot of awards for that. Founded 14 companies, has 3 patents, was a Pulitzer Prize nominee for one of his books. What else is important? Every award out there, including the Westinghouse Entrepreneur of the Year. Amazing. Lon, welcome back to the show. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, this is really great. I love this show. You're doing such a really good job. Thank you. I'm proud to be part of it.
Well, thank you for those kind words. It's been 5 or 6 years since we talked last. What you been up to? What are you working on now?
Yeah, just hanging out, having a good time. Aliens. You know, the more I work with this AI, the more I think, yeah, we got to have some help from the outside on this one.
You know, I'm amazed with AI. I'm using Chat 5 now, and I'm amazed at how good it is and how bad it is. You know, you tell it create a whatever in this, and it creates something, but this that you specified is the exact opposite. What are your experiences?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. They call that hallucinations, and I think we've all been guilty of that, but when you count on technology not to have that, it's disappointing. Yeah, the funniest one is when somebody says, how do you get cheese to stick to your pizza? They said, just add 2 cups of Elmer's glue.
That is a good one. Seriously, what are you using it for? You said that you spent a good chunk of the pandemic playing with AI. What did you come up with? What are your discoveries? What do you like to do with it?
Yeah, that was the real early days. Nobody even heard about AI. So I was teaching top executives around the world about AI. Not just AI, but AI, AR, VR, and IoT, which are the 4 technologies really that are still yet to change our lives the same way AI did. And I use, you mentioned Chat 5, ChatGPT. We're best friends. I mean, him and I hang out all day. It's unbelievable how much stuff you can use it for. I redid all of my e-commerce websites. I have 5 e-commerce sites, all the descriptions, all of the SEO, all of the keywords, it helped me with that. I coach 50 companies every single month through the Small Business Development Council, San Bernardino University. I help them by analyzing their websites, their business plans. I mean, I haven't found anything that I can't do, but you do have to be aware that every once in a while it goes on an acid trip for sure.
Yeah, it does. And it seems like it's over really, really stupid stuff. You know, I like the description that it's like a very smart graduate of the top MBA program, but still never had a job before.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. And when people ask me what my opinion of artificial intelligence is, I say that it's kind of short bus intelligence, really. It's a little less than it should be, but it's still, for the most part, you know, 99% of the time, it really does help us.
Are we going to lose millions of jobs because of it?
You know, I heard the same thing. I'm old enough to remember way back when computers first came out. Oh my God, everybody's going to use. No. We just changed the way we worked. We got retrained. The colleges eventually taught people how to use computers. Everybody started using them. And it turns out it actually created a lot of jobs. So yeah, maybe right now, yeah, graphic artists. I mean, even music. I had to develop an amazing piece of music for one of my websites. That's going to be impacted. But there's still no heart in it. You can still tell when you look at an image or hear a song or see something written that there's something missing. And I don't know if that is ever going to get fixed.
Do you want it to get fixed?
You know what? No, not necessarily.
Smarter than it. Still, you know, I don't really like the idea that they're smarter than all of us. That's kind of scary.
It's pretty darn smart, I'll tell you. I asked it to write a quick bio because I didn't feel like writing. Because I mean, I've been writing bios my entire career. And I said to Chad, I said, look at my websites. And I gave him two websites. And I said, and look at the entire history of the internet and write me the best 500-word bio you can. And it came back with things, honest to goodness, I didn't even remember I did. So, yeah, in that sense, it can still do a lot of things that we just can't do, but it's never going to replace us.
I hope not. I find that really scary. So, what about all of these doomsday predictions? It will get smarter than us and figure out we're not needed and turn us off.
Yeah, we're all looking around for Skylink every day and Terminator. And just ask Elon Musk. He hides under his bed every time you say something about AI. There's no doubt about it. I just don't ever see it happening. As long as we are doing the programming and we still have the control. Hey, you know what it comes down to? We can walk over to the wall sock and pull the plug. So, I don't know.
Though, it replicated itself to a computer that's on.
Well, it is doing that, and it's also writing its own code so that we don't have to, so it could be more efficient, which means that we don't even know what it's telling itself to do.
Yeah. What about the energy, the water use? The stat that stuck out to me the most was every time you hit enter on GPT-5, it's using a liter of water.
Yes. Yeah, you've done your homework on that. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I was just reading an article where Microsoft and Google are actually, believe it or not, going to start investing in nuclear power plants. A, because they're clean. B, we can actually reuse the waste and there doesn't have to be any waste. But the biggest thing is that most of the nuclear power plants are built along a major river or the ocean. So the water doesn't really get used. It just gets slightly heated and then put back into its original source. We don't lose it. And as long as you're on a river or an ocean, you have access to plenty.
Well, the fourth generation I've heard doesn't use water for the coolant anymore. It uses some special super chemical that we've invented. And so water is no longer a necessity for cooling nuclear power, is my understanding.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And one of the things that I don't put on my bio because it was kind of confidential, I have a Q clearance with the United States Department of Energy. It's the highest clearance issued by any government agency. And I worked at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation and I developed the world's first artificial intelligent computer system for tracking weapons grade plutonium and uranium. And I worked with this one engineer, and he had just won some kind of an award because you can't build all nuclear reactors on rivers and oceans. The matter of fact, the nuclear reactor that's built just west of Phoenix was built on his idea. And what they do is they use liquid sodium. It's basically liquid salt. If you take salt and you heat it high enough and put it under enough pressure, it turns into a liquid, and it'll cool better than anything else.
Well, and when did you realize that you weren't like the rest of us?
At a very early age, unfortunately, because people would volunteer to tell me that.
Well, what way was it? Was it, oh, look how smart he is, or, ooh, look how dorky he is? What was it, though?
They couldn't quite figure it out. Nobody, when I was a kid, actually felt very comfortable around me. I could answer questions faster, and there was no chance of beating me in an argument. So, yeah, it was weird kind of growing up. And it wasn't until I was actually in college that I finally accepted the fact, embraced the fact that I'm not normal. There's no doubt. And that's when I was able to use my abnormality to my advantage.
Define the abnormality. Is it on the spectrum, or is it eidetic memory, or where are you? What is the superpower?
You know, all of us are on the spectrum. You know, let's face it. Some are closer to the center. Some are closer to the edge. But none of us are 100% normal. The thing with me is that I can remember things really well. And anytime I'm faced with a problem, I can go back 25 or 30 years and remember something that I saw. And I said, you know, if we take this and we match it with this and we take that, all we have to do is build this little piece, and then you got it. And that's how I created the first computer to save a human life and invented fusion marketing. And I have 3 patents on three-dimensional internet advertising. It's just taking stuff that's around us and putting it together in a unique way.
Okay. And how old were you when you realized this? You said you embraced it in college. Were you 10 when you realized that you were different?
No, I was actually asked to leave my high school. So, no, I knew there was a problem, but I didn't think that it was going to work at my advantage. Yeah, I was one of the top 10 worst kids in my school district. I was asked to leave my high school because I just didn't fit in. But then when I went to college, I could take as many courses, more advanced courses, and it actually became a lot more comfortable for me. I wasn't continuously fighting the system. But I remember even 9 years old, I had to feed the dog. So I'd take the food and put it in a box, and I created this little chute with the door that opened, and I pull a string, and the dog food would come out of the box on top of a refrigerator, down the chute, and feed the dog. So I was always creating things ever since I was a young kid.
And how are your parents about all of this? Were they supportive or out?
They drank a lot, sure.
Okay. Were either of them super geniuses as well, or are you a freak of genetic?
Definitely a freak of genetics. My parents were smart. My dad was a policeman. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. Back in the 60s, that was kind of a big deal. And taking care of me was a full-time job, no question about it. I think I was 11 when I built my first CO2 bomb that blew up in the neighborhood and got all the fire department and police department there. And yeah. So, yeah, it was a challenge. But no, none of my siblings have this erratic gene.
And what about your children? Did it pass on to any of the children?
You know what? Oddly enough, I married a woman who I instantly fell in love with, and we were just about ready to celebrate our 40th anniversary together. She already had 3 children. Oh, it's wonderful. Gosh, when you find the right one, you know?
Yep.
Which is a huge difference than when you don't find the right one. And she had already had 3 kids, and so my family was like Top Ramen. You know, just add water, and there it is.
All right. That sounds both good and horrible.
No, it was good. The kids are wonderful. She had 3.
You seem like you laugh at almost anything. Are you worried about the climate or us blowing ourselves up with a bomb or any of these catastrophe scenarios? Or do you think that the best times are still ahead?
Yeah, and I don't arbitrarily laugh at everything. I mean, don't put that out into the atmosphere there. I mean, I'm not crazy. I've been tested. I walked in and I said, test me for ADD because I'm doing so many different things simultaneously. Am I worried? No, the cool thing is we blow ourselves up. I can't control it. So that's not something I have to worry about. I listen to some of the politics just for fun. I get a big kick out of how crazy they are. But no, I focus on my own stuff. Right now, again, I'm a professional business consultant for the University at San Bernardino. I run 5 e-commerce stores right now simultaneously. I'm also a professional speaker. I still travel all over the country talking about innovation and creativity. So I'm keeping busy. And I'll tell you a secret, but I can't tell you too much. I'm actually working on an 8-episode Netflix series.
Oh, cool. On computers or AI or what?
The answer is yes.
Okay. And when will that be coming out?
Well, I'm trying to lock in a producer. I had them and then we lost them. And so if you know any producers that want to take a look at the project, I'm happy to share that. It's going to be pretty big.
Well, it's already got you and Netflix. What else does the producer need to bring to the table?
Actually, I have 8 co-stars. I got William Shatner to agree to narrate it. All of the co-stars are names that you probably, you know, their technologies, that's for sure. And we're ready to go. I just need somebody that can put together the show, the showrunner, and all of the pieces, because I've never produced. I starred in a PBS television special, as you said, which I had to produce, but I've never produced anything as big as this for Netflix.
I actually do know a producer in Hollywood. She grew up as, you know, one of the people in the neighborhood, and really? Her daddy sold one of the carpet businesses in Dalton, Georgia, and they bought a Palladian villa in Italy.
Oh my gosh.
And lived there for a while, but she's now the producer of Magnum, the reboot of Magnum, and shows like really? That.
Really?
But she's, you know, a big time person now in the Los
Angeles. Does she want to adopt a son?
I don't know. I'll have to reach out to her. It's been a while since I've spoken with her, but anyone would want to be associated with you. That's just a no brainer right there. So.
Well, I don't know. It depends on who you ask.
Well, we're not asking your wife. So.
Well, no, we're buds. I told you, we're friends. Yeah.
What's up with Betsy Ross? How did you save Betsy Ross? Geez.
How do you find out all this stuff? Nobody knows that stuff. See, I told
Last
you you're a great
you were
interviewer.
On the show, you accused me of talking to your mother behind your back. Do you remember that?
See, and you got a great memory as well. Yeah, it totally strange. Coming back from New York, I was in the process of setting up an IPO with Goldman Sachs and Shearson Lehman, and it was late in the day, and I drove past this. Yeah, I was in Yonkers, New York, and I drove past this little museum. That's where, when I was born, I spent the first 5 years of my life, and I remember this history. I thought my dad and me in the museum, and that was 45 years earlier. So I pulled the car over, and the place was locked up because it was after 5, and I knocked, and I found the curator next door, and I told him that I think I have a Civil War Bible in there under my name. So we talked about that, and it turns out that he was on this committee where they were going through every single thing in all of our history books to verify whether they were true or not. And if they could verify it, they stayed in the books, and if they couldn't, they didn't. So I said, well, what are you working on? He says, Betsy Ross. There's absolutely no proof that Betsy Ross ever did the flag. It was the centennial, 1876, the granddaughter, who was the president of the Philadelphia Historical Society, did this article about her grandmother inventing the flag, but there was never any proof. And they kind of thought it was a made up story. So we were talking about how the flag was made and how she cut the stars. And they talked to seamstress and said, nobody would ever make 5-pointed stars because you can't make them perfect. You can't cut them perfect. Every time. They're really hard. And I said, give me a piece of paper and scissors. And we're talking. I folded the paper 4 times and I made 1 cut and handed it back. And it was a perfect 5-pointed star. He says, how did you do that? Do that again. So I folded the paper, cut it once, and there was a perfect 5-pointed star every time. I said, if she was a seamstress and she really knew what she was doing, she would know the trick that I just showed you. He went back to Virginia, presented it to the board, and it was evidence enough to keep her in the history books.
Wow. That's not really evidence of anything, though. I'm sorry. I don't see the connection. True. How does that prove that she did it?
Well, again, there was no evidence whatsoever. And they said that they would even take circumstantial evidence. And the circumstantial evidence that they had found is that every seamstress that they talked to said she would never, she would have used six pointed stars because you could take two triangles and flip one over the other. And that's what she would have made because she eventually you'd have to mass produce these flags. And he said, that's the one thing that's getting her kicked out of the book. And I said, well, I could change that for you. Give me a piece of paper. And I changed it. And they said, that's good enough because yeah, she would have understood that if she was a professional seamstress and map maker, flag maker. And that was just enough to tip the scales to get her to stay in the book.
How do you foster your creativity? Have you become more creative as you have lived? How do non-creative people learn to be creative?
You know, I was asked that about 10 years ago, and I was asked if I could do a keynote on it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I do it all the time. And it took me 2 years to actually figure out what the process was to be more creative. And over the last probably 8 years or so, I've traveled around the country and the world in every major city, actually 20 countries teaching top executives how to be more innovative, more creative. And the bottom line is, first of all, you got to turn off your radio. You got to put that iPhone down. Get those earbuds the heck out of your head because you cannot think and communicate the left side of your brain and the right side of your brain. You will not communicate if you're constantly bombarding it with noise because it's going to focus on that noise. So you got to shut it off. Shut it off in the car. Shut it off when you're walking because you know you get really good ideas at night when you're asleep, when you're exercising, when you're walking or running, sometimes when you're driving in a car. Well, that's because there's no noise. So that's the first thing.
I have my best moments either shaving or mowing the lawn.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. And the thing is, the left side of your brain is the analytical part. That really is true. That handles numbers and figures and learning things. The right side is it's pretty and it's the pictures and it's music. And it's, so the left side is keeping you alive. The right side, that's more on a higher level. The left side is where all of the solutions come. So during the day, what I do is I try to force myself to get on the internet, to read some articles, to see what's going on. Based on the problem that I'm trying to solve, I'll just type that into Google and see what random stuff comes up. So I keep putting this stuff into my head. At night, or when you're mowing the lawn, your left side of your brain has already put that puzzle piece together. Now, because you're not necessarily listening to your iPods when you're mowing the lawn, you don't have that continuous distraction. So the left side can talk to the right side and communicate that solution. And then you go, oh, that's what's over there on the left side. Sure, that's an easy solution.
Why are you in the Guinness book?
Well, I wish I could say because I'm athletically prowess or intellectually superior. When webinars first came out, it was a big deal. Nobody even knew what a webinar was. I got together with one of the top social media, well, several of the top social media authors, and I said, what would happen if we put together the longest continuous running webinar in history? And they said, well, what do you think? And I said, let's go 24 hours. And they're like, okay. So we got a whole bunch of us other social media, New York Times bestsellers, and we contacted them because we knew each other because we were all in the same space, and we all agreed to do it. So we took turns, and every hour a new person would jump in and keep that same webinar going, and we ran that webinar for more than 24 continuous hours, and we broke. There was no record at the time because webinars were so brand new, so it was kind of cutting edge.
That hasn't been beat yet?
Not to my knowledge. I think nobody want to bother to beat that. It took a lot of work.
Yeah, the logistics would not be easy. Bouncing between 25 different speakers and such.
Exactly. Plus, we couldn't lose the connection. If somebody screwed up once, then we couldn't claim the 24 hours. Yeah. So there's a lot of pressure.
Those Guinness people are sticklers.
Oh, boy. Yes, they are.
I found out that if you announce the event in advance, say you're having a bar and we're going to have a Guinness record attempt to have the most beers drunk in 1 hour, that already you're out. because you can't announce that it's a Guinness event in advance.
Yeah, I definitely heard that. And when I got my Pulitzer, I was told that I didn't get a Pulitzer. Let me make it 100%. I got nominated, that you're not allowed to discuss it. You can't even say that you're nominated, because even if you say anything before all the final results are done, that you're automatically disqualified. So yeah, a lot of the, and I mean, I got my fingers crossed for a Nobel Peace Prize. I'm sure it's the same way, which I'm kidding, by the way.
No, those people do a ton of, politicking and stuff. That's a very active campaign award, I've heard.
Yeah, yeah. It costs a lot of money, and you have to have a lot of clout. Yeah, you got to. The university is kind of, not that I want to disparage it, but yeah, it's based on money. It's like the Oscars and a lot of the other. Oscars are, they're $25 million. That's what they cost. And if you want a New York Times bestseller, I know the guy that arranges that, and that's $50,000.
Yes. I think one of the things that's gone so bad is that the words bestseller don't mean anything anymore now because of Amazon. Being a bestseller on Amazon is not a big deal. It takes nothing.
Yeah, you throw a bunch of your blogs together and you throw it up on KDP. I got 22 books on Amazon. And yeah, you throw up a book, 24 hours later, it's available. Your mother buys it, and now that's your best-selling book.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and unfortunately, that happened. The easier the technology got, and the more technology that we got, radio show. You go to Blog Talk Radio, it doesn't cost you anything. Nobody asks you for any money. You don't have to have any sponsors, and you don't have any followers. But if you want a radio show, you can do that. If you want your own newspaper, set up a blog. If you want your own book, go to KDP. There isn't even any cost associated with KDP. We removed all the barriers to entry. So, when any idiot can write a book, every idiot does.
From the man with 22 books. How long does it take you to do a book? What's your work process like?
It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy writing. The big one, the Social Media Bible, published by John Wiley and Sons. I'm published with three of the six largest publishers, Pearson, John Wiley, and McGraw-Hill. But that one was a bear. I got to be friends with Peter Booth Wiley, and basically he said, we'll make a deal with you. You write us the biggest book in history on digital marketing, and we'll write you the biggest check that we've written an author. I was like, you're on. So I delivered, that book took me 9 months, but I delivered an 850-page book on everything that has to do with digital marketing. I mean, email marketing, SEO, SEM, Facebook, LinkedIn, webinars, mobile marketing. I mean, everything is in there. But luckily, third edition, 5 languages, used by 200 universities across the world, and generated over 2 million in sales. That one took 9 months. Most books I could knock out, a typical 250-page business book, 23 chapters, I can usually knock those out in about a month.
What are you bad at?
What am I bad at? Accounting. Oh, my God.
Well, you know why? That's because accounting is a lie. The two columns do not have to equal each other. That's just made
Thank
up.
You. Thank you.
They're just liars is what they are.
They're liars. That's exactly right.
Well, we have run out of time. Unbelievably.
No.
We haven't even gotten to the topic of conversation yet. So you'll have to come back sooner this time.
Pretty please. I would love to do that. You really are a great interviewer. I get a big kick out of talking with you. Always ask the right questions. It's so much fun.
Each day from now on, I'll just do it for an hour every day to cheer you up. Morning.
Okay. Let's not push it now.
How do we find out more about you? Follow you online.
Yeah. Just go to safko.com. That's my last name. SAFKO. I'm right there. Contact me. And if you can't find it there, I'll show you where to get it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us. I'm glad that we're not all going to die from AI, and I can't wait for the 8-volume Netflix series. What am I going to be in the series? Can I be like the porter or the guy that carries the paper in, or like open a taxi door? Can I open a taxi door for somebody?
You introduced me to the right producer, then you're the executive producer.
Ah, okay. Lon, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure.
And we will be right back.
That's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one. You know, that is a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question, and that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
We are back, and again, thank you so very much for being with us. Very excited to introduce my next guest because I have pain, and he is the guy who will bust our pain. Please welcome Butch Phelps to the show. He is author of a new book, just won a big award called Stretch and Release, The Missing Piece to a More Pain-Free Life. Butch, for the last 20 years or so, has been running a business that's dedicated to our muscles. It's called the Muscle Repair Shop. And that is the website as well. Butch, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Thanks, Jim. I'm doing well.
So when did you get the name Butch?
So Butch actually was given to me at birth.
What happened if you've been a wuss?
I know, really. My dad gave that to me because my first name was the same as his, and he was afraid someone would call me Junior. So he gave me Butch, and I'm like, really? That's the best you could have done.
Well, it's a great name if you can live up to it, but that's a hard name to live up to.
It is that. Luckily, I got his size, so I was always really strong and really big, and so that helped a lot.
Okay. Are you a big, tall guy?
Yeah, I'm like 6'4". I've used right around 200 pounds when I was younger. I got up to about 230, 240, working out and so forth. So, yeah, it helped a lot to have the size.
Excellent. Well, you certainly look like you've grown into the name, so it works.
I did.
All right. Tell us about your work and how bad my muscles are. And let me just go ahead and tell you this. When I stretch and try to bend and touch my toes, I'm lucky to get to my knees someday.
Yeah.
But I also have bad, bad, bad pain everywhere. Joints, muscles, just every damn place hurts. So tell me about what you're doing.
So number one, trying to touch your toes is not necessarily a great thing. And the reason for that, and that's going to tie right into what I do, is that when you're trying to bend down and touch your toes, you're actually trying to stretch 3 hamstrings, 4 calf muscles, and 2 rotating muscles in your hips all at the same time. And so one of the things that I've learned in working in the muscles the last 25 years is that the muscles have an emotional side as well as they have a physical side. And what I mean by that is that when you bend down to touch your toes, you're only going to push yourself so far because as the pain increases, the brain starts to fear that you may tear something or hurt yourself. So it contracts the muscles to prevent you from doing that. So when I started putting together my stretch and release technique, I started adding in the fact that we had to account for the brain when we do our stretching, and we're not lengthening muscles, but what we're actually doing is we're releasing tension in muscles. So for so many people who do traditional stretching, like we're taught in school, they're following the idea that I'm going to make my muscles longer, and your muscles won't get any longer. They're attached on both ends, but everything you think, feel, and do every day actually causes the muscles to build tension. Think of a rubber band twisting. And so what you're doing with stretching is by incorporating the brain with the stretching, you actually cause the muscle to release that tension, and that allows the body to move more freely.
Okay.
So I got you lost, right?
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
So how do we release the pain? By stretching one muscle at a time?
So you're going to stretch basically one muscle at a time, but we're not stretching the whole body. So to give you an example, the calf is an easy example to use. Most people, when they stretch a calf, they lean against the wall with one foot a little bit further back, or they step on a slam board, or they drop the heel off of a step. Because you have really 4 calf muscles back there that control the foot vertically, laterally, and rotationally, by doing those stretches, all you're stretching is the Achilles tendon. Now, when you bend over to touch your toes, you'll feel some tightness in behind your knee. Everybody thinks that's your hamstrings, which there's 3 of those. It's actually the calf muscles themselves because they go and attach above the knee. So what's limiting you is not so much your hamstrings as it is your calf. Keep in mind, 99% of people who have tried to do calf stretching has really never stretched their calves. So the best way to do that is to sit on the floor with your back against the wall. If you can't sit on the floor, you can, of course, sit in a hard back chair with an ottoman with one leg straight out in front of you. You can take a yoga strap and put it around the ball of your foot, and you're going to gently pull the toe back as you breathe out. You're not going to force it. Most people, when they try to do that, they want to do bicep curls using their feet as resistance. But you're going to breathe out as you gently pull the toe back. Hold for 5 seconds so that you don't engage a stretch reflex. But repeat that stretch 10 times, because what you're doing is you're showing the brain that this is not a dangerous move. Once you're done with that, you rotate the leg inward so you can stretch the outside calf muscle. Do 10 more repetitions. And then rotate the leg outward to get the inside calf muscle, to get the inside calf muscle free as well. So what it's really more meditative. Everybody thinks of stretching as this power move. And if you really look at it from a logical standpoint, if I catch my foot with a yoga strap and I'm pulling as hard as I can, I'm building my biceps and my shoulders just using my foot as resistance, which is actually strength training.
Does the book have pictures?
It does have pictures. My YouTube channel, the Muscle Repair Shop, has over 200 videos on it that you can actually see it in action as well. And so what I do is I go through different ailments, different things people have. So when you're thinking about muscles of the human body, most of the time when people have, let's say, back pain, low back pain, they think they have a back problem. And most of the time, what they have is a thigh problem, the front of their thighs or their inner thighs. And they'll complain about, well, when I stand up, my back really hurts. Or if I stand for long periods of time, my back will hurt. But if I sit, the pain goes away. That's a thigh problem. That's not a back issue. So what happens is that the quads can get tight, or the inner thighs. It pulls the top of the pelvis slightly forward, which increases the curve in the small of the back, which generates the pain in the back, because you're engaging those low back muscles to make you stand up straight, to try to stand up straight, and those muscles fatigue out and then they go into a spasm. So what I've learned over the last 25 years is when somebody says to me, it hurts when I stand, but it doesn't when I sit down, what I found is that by freeing up those quad muscles on the front of their thighs, you can knock that out in about 2 or 3 days.
All right. So why does stress create pain? And
perfect question.
Create it everywhere? Because just to let you know, in the last 4 or 5 years, while I've been having this horrible pain, I've also been through ungodly stress. I mean, unbelievable stress in my personal and professional life. You know, like Butch, our house was raided by the police. You know, that kind of stress. You know, real stress. So why does that make my muscles hurt?
Okay, so when you think of the term fight or flight response, the brain, when it notices there's danger, and that can be chronic stress like from aches and pains, but that can also be stress from things happening to you in your life. The brain works the same way no matter which way it's coming at you. And so once the brain is on high alert, it then contracts and tightens all the muscles in your body so that if you have to run or hide or fight, then the body then is prepared to do that. And you want your brain to do that. And so when you think about the muscles themselves, and people talk about muscle memory, the muscles themselves really don't have a memory. What you have is a neural pathway in the brain. And just like what you're talking about with stress, anytime you feel pain, it's the same thing. The brain then sees that as a threat. And then you go into the fight or flight, which contracts every muscle in your body from grinding your teeth all the way down to the muscles in your feet contracting because you're getting ready to either fight or run.
Okay. And then stretching the correct way releases that tension. How? Is it a chemical? Yes. When you say the brain stresses or flexes the muscles.
Yeah.
So how does stretching help that?
So there's
like
a couple
of
things.
To cut part of my brain out.
No. That you wanted to do that because if you're in a building that's on fire, you want your brain to be able to, in other words, every time you stand to move, the brain has a neuropathic set of rules that it has in itself that knows which muscles to engage so you can stand up and not fall down. So if you're in a building that's on fire and the brain says, oh my gosh, this is trouble, we got to get him out of here, then the brain automatically knows which muscles to engage to get you out of trouble. And so when people talk about muscle memory, the thing is the muscles don't remember anything, this reactive tissue. And so if the muscles had memory, what would stop if the brain said, hey, the building's on fire, we got to get out of here, that the muscles in your leg would then say, well, we don't feel up to it today, we just want to stay here. And so you would die. And so the brain has to be that way. And so when you're stretching, instead of pulling muscles like I'm trying to pull them out so that they will be longer and freer, by relaxing the mind, breathing out through that stretch and allowing the body to relax. So see, the body won't relax until the mind relaxes. Once you do that, then the muscles will release. And when the muscles release, now you can get better range of motion. Now, that's important because as you move your joints to your full range of motion, that allows the body to put synovial fluid, which is like a WD-40, in your joints to protect the joints and keep them healthy for the rest of your life. So the stretching then becomes important. Now, the difference between stretching and strength training is, think of strength training like putting gasoline in your car for power, but think of stretching like putting oil in the engine for lubrication. You leave one out, the car stops. Same thing is true of the human body. We've made the mistake of teaching people that you only stretch when you feel tight, you only stretch when you have a pain. Stretching is a daily thing, just like eating is, because everything you think, feel, and do will tighten your muscles. Even if you're having a dream in the middle of the night, you'll tighten your muscles as you sleep. So the stretching then becomes important. It becomes, like I said, meditative, because the purpose of the brain with the muscles is to get the brain to relax so that the muscles will relax. And once you do, they'll free up.
So if it's all about the brain, wouldn't yoga or something like that?
Oh, yeah, good question. Well, no, I love yoga. Don't get me wrong. I love yoga. And I always say to my friends, yoga is great for flexible people. Yoga has the mind-body connection, which is basically the same thing. The problem is, for most people, they don't fully understand it because very few people actually teach that. It's the same kind of thing. If you watch a yogi doing yoga, his or her movements are effortless. And it's like when you see people in most yoga classes, they're working hard to get into a pose. They're working hard to hold that pose. Well, if that's what you're doing, you're strength training. You're not stretching anything. And to hold a pose takes a lot of strength and stamina to hold that pose. So you're actually strength training. There are parts of yoga that is the stretching. But again, that mind-body connection, which is very similar to the muscle-mind connection I talk about, is that you have to let go emotionally before your body will let go. Your body's just reacting to what you emotionally feel.
What's wrong with just a good solid shot then? It seems like if it's all about the brain, you know, a couple of good shots of whiskey would make it better.
Well, it would for the moment. And I've seen people who feel their back hurts or whatever, and they'll have a couple of shots of whiskey or tequila or whatever, and they go, I feel fine now, until they wake up tomorrow morning. The idea is that what we want to do is to maintain our bodies in a position, and that's where the stretching comes in on a daily basis, so that we don't damage our joints, we don't damage the disc and have problems later on in life where it's going to require surgery to repair the damage, because we spent 20, 30, 40 years walking badly, standing badly, sitting badly, and not fixing the body so that it can recoup and save itself.
All right. Interesting. Yeah, how long is the stretch program that someone needs to do for just general body?
The rest of their lives.
No. How long a day? Like, is it 20 minutes, about, 30 minutes, an hour?
Yeah, about 15, 20 minutes in the morning, 15, 20 minutes before you go to bed at night is usually what I get my clients to do. In the morning, it's important because when you're sleeping at night, like I said earlier, if you have a dream or whatever, the brain doesn't know the difference between what you perceive versus what actually happens. And so you can tighten your muscles just while you're dreaming in the middle of the night. So getting up in the morning, stretching your legs and your body to get yourself going is fine. And that doesn't mean you stretch the entire body, But you'll have, everybody has certain spots on their body from the way they walk, from the way they stand and so forth, that will get tight on a more regular basis. And so you stretch those muscles back out. And then in the evening, after all day with the stress and working and so forth, when you go home at night before you go to sleep, you stretch again for 15, 20 minutes. And what you'll find is you'll have a better night's sleep when you do that, because the body is more at rest.
Okay. Yeah. And it's a particular type of stretch too, right? You're saying we're doing the wrong stretches that high school taught us.
Yes, because what they taught us with the static stretching is that we're going to pull as hard as we can and hold as long as we can, because for most people, they think they're fighting with their muscles. And what they're fighting with is their brain, the fear of hurting themselves. And it's like, so when you listen to people who talk about traditional stretching, static stretching, you'll hear them talk about, we're going to lengthen the muscle. And your muscles are never going to get long enough for a 7-foot basketball player, in other words. So what you're doing is you're working to release the tension in your body caused by the daily stresses of whatever caused that. You're releasing that tension in the muscles, because the muscles are holding on to that tension. And then by doing these stretches with a yoga strap or an 8-foot rope, you actually cause the body to release that. And when you do, it frees the joints, it frees the spine, and allows the body to play much better.
Why are you the only one talking about this? Why is my doctor not mentioned this too?
That's a million-dollar question, and I've asked that question for 25 years. I've had conversations with doctors, orthopedists, neurologists, podiatrists, and so forth, and usually what I get back from them is, this is what we should be teaching people in school. And even when I went back to school in 2017, 2018 to get a degree in aging sciences, and I had to go through anatomy classes with medical students and PT students, there's a disconnect on that emotional side of muscles. And some of the doctors would say, you know, what you're doing makes muscles way more complicated to understand. And it does, because there's a psychological component as well as a physical component to the muscles. Bones don't have that. The muscles have that. And so from a school aspect, when you look at peer-reviewed studies, which we did when I was in school because they wanted me to write a paper about it, there's virtually nothing in peer-reviewed studies that really study that, because it's hard to measure. And understanding that how that brain works with those muscles and that fight or flight doesn't translate apparently into the physical world of how to loosen those muscles. So it's been quite a ride. And I've asked that question you just asked many times. And in fact, when I was at the university, talking about, which just blew my mind.
Yes. My father was a physician, and he told me that in medical school, 50% of what they taught, they didn't understand, and the other 50% was just a lie.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of things that I learned in, I started out as a massage therapist. A lot of things I learned in massage therapy about muscles, I had to totally forget and change once I started learning from my mentors about how to do the muscles here.
Are there certain muscles that are more important for us? You know, it seems like, you know, the back, the knees, the hands are certain places that hurt the most. And talk to me about the hands. How do I stretch my hands?
So there's quite a few stretches for the hands. Now, the one thing you can remember about the hands is, from the elbow to the tips of your fingers, there's 26 muscles. So all the muscles that are in your forearm controls the hand, the gripping, the releasing, the rotation of the hand. So a lot of times people may have what they call elbow tendonitis, and they think there's a problem with their elbow, but it comes usually to people who grip things with their hands a lot. It can be a steering wheel, a golf club, maybe they're a construction worker. And so when you're looking at the hands, you've got the muscle between the index finger and your thumb. There are special stretches for that, which are on my videos, that you can actually stretch that area back out to really open that up so you can keep your hands with the open wide. There's self-massages that you can do on your hands as well. And then the final thing is, get back into that forearm. When you soften that forearm, you not only free up the hand, but by softening it, you free up the two bones in the forearm that actually causes the hand to rotate and actually function properly. So you've got, like, on the underside of your forearm, five muscles that come from your elbow to the tips of your finger that allow you to close your hand. In fact, if you make a fist with your hand as you're feeling your forearm, you'll feel those muscles moving in your forearm. on the outside of, on the top of the forearm, you've got five muscles that go to the tips of your fingers from the elbow that allows you to open your hand. So sometimes when somebody feels like they have a weak grip, the first thing most people do is they want to start strengthening their hands. What could be happening is that the muscles on the top of the forearm could be tight, and that prevents the muscles on the bottom side from really being able to contract as hard as they're used to doing. Now, you asked a question about what were some of the more prominent muscles that we need to really focus on. Calf muscles are probably the most important part of the human body to stretch, because it's the foundation of the human body. Think of your body like a skyscraper. We all know that when you're building a skyscraper, it all starts in the foundation to keep that building from falling down. Well, the same is true for the calves and into the feet. And so when you look at your calves, it controls the foot vertically for walking, laterally for balance, and rotationally. So when people have balance issues, or they'll put things in their shoes to try to solve a problem, if they walk on the outside of their foot, the inside of their foot, that's actually a calf issue. That's not a foot issue. And by putting those orthotics and so forth in people's shoes, it works more like a cast. And so if you're not careful with that on a long-term uses of it, short-term is fine, but on a long-term uses of it, you may cause problems in your knees or hips and back. The back, there's two places in the back that create more back pain than anything else. For the low back, it's usually going to come from the front of the thighs, the quads, or the inner thighs. If it's the quads on the front, the pain is usually more towards the outside. And like I said earlier, when you stand up, you feel pain. If it's the inner thighs, it's more to the middle of that back. Same thing when you stand up, you feel pain. If you sit down and feel pain, that can come from the hamstrings on the backside. And that's because it tilts the pelvis backwards, flattening out the lower part of your back. And so when you sit down, you put too much strain there. And the upper body, the outside chest muscles, are responsible for rounded shoulders in people, mid-back pain, head forward posture. So with the outside chest muscles tighten on you, it pulls the shoulders around, and that head then starts to lean forward. Well, every inch your head leans forward, it increases the pressure down between your shoulder blades by up to 10 pounds per inch. So those are the areas on the human body that if you did nothing else but those three or four areas, you would find that a lot of pain in your body would stop.
Wow. Yeah. Intriguing, Butch. I am going to have to read this one because it will help me, I feel, a lot. Have you ever been told who you look like?
I've been told I look like Bill Clinton.
That's what I was going to say, yes. Except you're better looking than Bill Clinton.
Well, when I was a little bit heavier, I got it a lot. In fact, the funniest thing, I was playing tennis with a guy one night over at one of the high schools, and when I got done, he wanted to take a selfie of me, and so he could show his friends he was playing tennis with Bill Clinton. And I said, why don't you shoot a short video? And he said, why is that? And I said, well, just shoot it and I'll tell you. So he shot the video. And as he was doing the video, I said, I never had sexual relations with that woman in my life. And he had a kick out of that. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. And for you, it's true.
Yes, that is true. That is true. That's what I have ever built.
Yes. Absolutely fascinating, Butch. You have been an eye-opener. Thank you so much for being with us. How do we get your stuff?
So to get my stuff, to get the book, it's on Amazon. It's easy to find. Just type in Stretch and Release, and you'll get the book there. It just won an award in August from the Florida Authors and Publishers Association, so I'm really proud of that being my first book out.
Yes.
If you want to see more on the videos, like I said, I've got more than 200 videos on my YouTube channel, The Muscle Repair Shop. And if you go to my website, which is musclerepairshop.com, you can also sign up for a weekly newsletter. And in that newsletter, I will talk about specific ailments that people have. I'll talk about what are the true causes of that. Why do most traditional treatments either fall short or fail? And then how you can use Stretch and Release to solve that problem. And then I'll back it up with three videos in that newsletter.
Fantastic. Butch, thank you so much for being with us. Great, great information, and we'd love to have you back.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Anytime, man.
And we are out of time, so you know what that means. That's right. We are done for today, but back tomorrow. Be safe. Take care. Go stretch and be safe. Bye now.